Water is the difference between life and death.
And there is not a drop between here and Beersheba. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Indiana Jones Universe, a podcast in which we learn more about the character of Indiana Jones, exploring other content in the Indiana Jones Universe. As always, I'm Will.
And I'm Max.
And thanks for joining us for episode 46, in which today we're continuing our discussion and exploration of the young Indiana Jones television series with Chapter 15, Daredevils in the Desert. In this episode, Indy travels to Palestine and goes on an undercover mission with a British regiment and the Australian Light Horsemen to take the town of Beersheba. And in order to do this, Indy reunites with Ned and Colonel Meinertzhagen to try to convince the Turks and the Germans that they're going to continue their attacks on the city of Gaza. Meanwhile, Indy travels to Beersheba to protect the wells and meets Maya, who poses as a belly dancer and is a double agent in this episode. Towards the end of the episode, we have a climactic battle in which Indy also meets a German officer played by a young Daniel Craig, which leads to a climactic fistfight at the end of this episode. So with lots of historical events, notable guest actors, great characterization, and lots of classic Indy fistfights, there's a lot to discover in this episode. So without further ado, let's tackle this daring endeavor, shall we?
Yes, we shall. Let's jump right into it. And, you know, there is something that I noticed right off the bat in this episode, and that's that Indy is not there. We don't see Indy in the first whole 5 minutes of this episode, which is very, very interesting. You know, they're storming the desert on the horses, you know, there's bombing, there's a tank, and we even see Ned in this episode before we even see Indy. So I find that very, very interesting that, you know, Indy kind of is played off as a minor character for the first 5 minutes of the episode until we jump really into the deep nitty-gritty stuff of the episode.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. It's very interesting that Indy isn't represented right in the first opening scene here. We've seen that in previous episodes, but in this situation, he's not even part of this battle, as we see. He's actually off in Cairo. We find out he's not even kind of here in this setting yet. So I like how this setting is introduced with this sort of assault on Gaza here, as we see this great battle opening scene, which is very, very well done. Excellent cinematography as you're kind of back to the trenches. We talked about moving off of that lighthearted episode from Espionage Escapades. We have kind of a different aspect of the war as we're here kind of in the Middle East and Palestine here. And I especially love the sound of those horses at the beginning. Really, really great sound and cinematography. This was done by Simon Winsor, who is a great filmmaker. And actually, he used some scenes from a movie he did in 1987 called The Light Horseman in this episode, which is really interesting. And I think the first thing we got to talk about is the notable guest stars in this episode. This episode is sort of the very famous and supposedly most popular Young Indy episode, because a lot of people find out about Young Indy because of these notable guest stars, and some people even watch this episode first, kind of like on its own, and it kind of does work as kind of a standalone movie in a sense. We've got a young Daniel Craig playing the German officer Schiller, which was really awesome. Of course, he's known for his famous role as James Bond. We've got Catherine Zeta-Jones, who plays the double agent Maya here, who also is a very famous actress. Colin Baker from Doctor Who is in this episode as well, which was kind of fun. And you may have even recognized Ben Miller. He was the French contact that Indy met in Cairo. He had a mustache, so it was hard to recognize him. But he's kind of a supporting actor in various modern-day movies. So lots of great actors. And then, of course, some reappearances from two great characters, Ned and Colonel Meinertzhagen from Phantom Train of Doom.
Yes, and, you know, I love how, you know, he includes previous characters in these episodes. Now, granted, you got to remember that a lot of the episodes before this were, you know, two 50-minute episodes put together, or 45-minute episodes put together. This was actually not, and what happened here is actually the original Daredevils of the Desert, almost nobody has ever seen. This is kind of like a bunch of clips of that and some other things smashed together, hence the reason this is only 1 hour and 20 minutes instead of, you know, the standard 1 hour and 30 minutes or 1 hour and 35 minutes.
Yeah, great point you bring up there. Palestine 1917, which is the original name for this episode, was only 45 minutes long. And so far, we've seen two episodes put together to make that hour and 30 minutes. Or we've seen episodes like The Phantom Train of Doom, which originally aired as the full 90-minute feature. Here, actually, this episode didn't even air in the U.S., so it's very rare to actually see this original episode in itself. And when the show was adapted for DVD in its chronological format here, they basically took this original 45-minute episode and edited a bunch of brand new footage into it, and of course those scenes from The Light Horseman, like I just mentioned as well. So there's lots going on here, and you can actually kind of tell some of the scenes. Some of the music is reused from My First Adventure, which may be kind of a hint at those scenes being new. Indy looks slightly older in the scene when he has lunch with Jack and Dex. And then there's some other scenes kind of in the middle with Indy and Maya going across the desert, which a lot of people think were kind of also there to stretch out the episode a lot longer. So very, very interesting. Again, if you watch the episode for the first time and didn't know that previously, you probably wouldn't have known. But it's really interesting to think about what was that original 45-minute episode like. And if you're interested in actually seeing some of the original episodes, there's a great YouTube channel that just started recently called Young Indie Restored, in which someone is taking the original old indie bookends and matching them up to the 45-minute episodes if you'd really like to dive into the original show. So that's awesome as well.
Yes, that's very interesting. I hope that maybe we can even see the original Palestine 1917. That'd be very, very awesome.
Yeah, I would love to see that as well. It'd be super, super cool, especially considering so much has changed, you know, since the 90s. It's archaeology in itself, I guess you could say, for what happened with the show originally.
Yes, it'll be a nice indie archaeological dig to find that thing.
Literally, yeah. I mean, this episode has a lot going on. And like you said, right from the start, we don't even see Indy there, which is really fascinating. And we have this idea of the Australian Light Horseman, which is kind of the sort of side story with sort of Indy and the double agents, kind of this mix of espionage and traditional sort of trench warfare, I guess you could say, this sort of World War I idea. And I like how the Australian Light Horsemen are added into this story. It really adds a nice flair to it as well. And Indy even meets two of these characters, Jack and Dex, as well. So this opening scene really sets the tone for kind of who's going to be in this episode. And again, that cinematography is absolutely fantastic. Which I really like, especially that scene when they order the retreat and we see them all falling back there. We see that sort of those tanks there, which are really fantastic. Just, again, going back to what we talked about in Trenches and Verdun, very, very well done, elaborate war set pieces here.
Yeah, I really love, especially, you know, the scenery here in the beginning. And, you know, as you said, we do not see Indy in the first 5 minutes of the episode, but what we do see is Ned. And they're kind of talking about how they need to make a trek across the desert. And they also talk about how there's no water from here to Beersheba, which is actually our quote from the beginning of this episode today. But then Ned chimes in and he's like, I have the perfect man for your job. And that's when they go and find Indy, and Indy learns that he's been reassigned to the British intelligence.
Yeah, I love this scene here where we get introduced to Ned and Colonel Meinertzhagen, both bringing back sort of that flair of the original episodes. We've talked about Ned so much in our previous Young Indy reviews. Keep in mind, this is his second appearance in the show. That's it. And we've talked about him so much, you know. So he is played by a different actor in this episode. I'm not really sure as to what happened there, if just the actor couldn't play the part anymore or that was intentional or something. But it is played by a different actor who I think does a great job kind of giving us that spirit of recreating the historical figure of Lawrence of Arabia. And then Colonel Meinertzhagen from Phantom Train of Doom. He was one of the officers there as well, is also back in this episode. He's played by Julian Firth, who also played one of my favorite side characters, Dr. Lambert from Trenches of Hell. And if you've been with us for a while now, you may remember episode 19, where we talked about the book adaptation of Prisoner of War. Max, we had a little too much fun with that episode talking about the doctor and the great dialogue in that. So it's fun to have Julian Firth back in this episode. Fantastic actor. I really love his interpretation of both of those characters.
Right. Unfortunately, you know, he is not playing the fast-talking doctor, but His style and sense of humor is definitely very prominent in this episode.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I love it. It's great. And speaking of kind of transitioning to this next scene here, I love how they show this great scene of Cairo. Really gives you a throwback to Raiders here. I really, really like that, especially as we see Ben Miller walking through the marketplace here, of course. And I just love this opening kind of feel that you get right down to business. You know, we have this opening battle scene, and then immediately we kind of learn You know, that now they're going to go attack Beersheba instead of Gaza. They've had two attempts, both of which have failed. And so I really, really like that idea of, again, sort of this kind of end-all, be-all situation here, right? 50,000 men across the desert in 2 days with no water, and Indy's going to be the one to kind of, he's going to be the deciding factor in this, of course. And so I really like how, you know, they added that. And that's what I think is super cool about this episode, especially right when Indy gets reassigned. And he's like, Meinrad Sagan? Oh, right, Africa. I was with him when he almost got me killed from a from a German artillery train. And so all that kind of stuff, I think, is really fun, bringing back old characters and kind of the fate in, is all in kind of in the hands of Indy there.
Yes, and speaking of Cairo and throwback to Raiders, there is actually a reference, there's references in this episode to all three movies, Last Crusade, Temple of Doom, and Raiders, which I find very, very cool and very interesting.
Yeah, there were lots of references to kind of little subtleties, yeah, to some great moments of the movies, and I really, really enjoyed that. And especially here, I love as well this transitional period of Indy going from Cairo, you know, here. Obviously, we haven't seen what happens with Indy and Cairo this entire time. He's just kind of been there, kind of this big gap in between espionage and Daredevils, and we really don't know what's going on, and then immediately gets reassigned here. Captain Defense reporting as duty, and I love how Meinrad Sagan here. He's like, surprised to see me again. And he's like, you could say that, sir. I love that scene there.
Yes, I love when, especially when Indy just reunites with people he's seen before, he throws in some subtle references or laughs in there that makes the audience laugh, which I think is really, really cool. And it's great for us because we get to laugh all about it, you know, when we're talking about it here in our podcast. But, you know, especially just when you're watching it, you're like, oh, I remember that, or stuff like that. It's very, very cool.
Exactly, yeah. I love throwbacks like that. It really adds a lot of fun to it. And I love that. One thing I wanted to mention right off the bat here, which we saw in Oganga a little bit, I love the callback here to the young Indy hat. You actually notice the hat that Indy wears throughout some of this opening part of the episode is a callback to the same one Corey Carrier wears in My First Adventure when he's with Ned. I love that choice there. Very detailed, in particular, about the sort of attire that Indy is wearing here. Of course, there's some fantastic suits that he wears throughout this entire show. And then, again, things that kind of give us more of that archaeology feel with his hat that he wore when he was a young kid. We saw it in Oganga as well. Really enjoyed seeing that again.
Oh, actually, I did not notice that. That's very interesting to see that he's wearing the same hat he did in My First Adventure. I did not notice that. Cool.
Yeah, it's really cool because he's obviously a lot older here, and so I like that they brought that aspect kind of back. It's a little bit different, but it's pretty similar to the point where it does kind of remind you of it, especially his attire is also very similar to kind of what he wore in his early days, I guess you could say. Jack and Colonel Meinrad Sagan, of course, go with Indy bird watching. And this is very interesting here as we see the scene in which we see the Turks actually come up the hill, and Meinrad and Indy don't even notice them at first. And they're like, good Lord, the Turks. And they run back. And we have this whole sort of action sequence here of this deception chase in which Meinrad actually gets shot. And he jumps on the horse, which was really awesome, by the way. I love that. That was a really cool stunt right there. And we see him loses his bag, and Indy picks it up just barely, throws it to him, and then he drops it. So kind of a lot going on here, which we get a little bit of a sense of what was actually going on here in this next scene when Indy helps him back at camp.
Right. He helps him back, and all of a sudden he's completely fine and pulls out this thing from his shirt, and it turns out it was fake blood, and it was like more kind of like protection to kind of throw the Turks off so they would let them go and, you know, let them get back to camp. They're like, oh, he's gonna die because he got shot, but no, it's actually fake blood, which I thought was really, really cool.
Yeah, I mean, in the words of Colonel Meinrad Sagan, I grabbed the bag and gave it a jolly good squeeze, you know? You know, I mean, he just, I love this sort of thing. He called it a flim-flam, you know, convinced the Turks that they are going to attack Gaza. And in this actual case, you'll notice that there's like a lot of documents in there, you know, very personal items, and then some more documents that are going to basically kind of some military plans of them actually attacking on Gaza. And he came up with this whole sort of espionage idea. And I love the combination of that here. There's kind of two sides to stories. We have the Australian Light Horsemen, who of course are helping out the British in this episode, and then also kind of behind the scenes, Indy's doing all this fun espionage. Great kind of combination of like stuff we saw from like Secret Service, for example, with, you know, some more kind of a more Phantom Train feel, kind of like the combination of both of those two in a sense.
Yeah, that, you know, just everything in this episode is very, yeah, it's very interesting, especially how there's references to the other episodes and how they're, like, as you said, kind of combined in this episode. So that's really, really cool, especially, you know, I got to keep going back to this. The fake wound and the fake blood, it's something you don't see at all in Young Indy, and I would have never expected to see until I watched this episode. And I'm like, oh, you know, like, it's so elaborate how they avoid the Turks in this episode is very, very cool.
Yeah, I really like that as well. You know, I'm watching this scene for the first time. I remember I was like, wow, that was actually really clever. And of course, you as the audience don't know this is happening. Really, really cool. I did enjoy that scene as well. And we transition to the next scene where we see Daniel Craig, most of his dialogue for the first time here, as he's showing Colonel Eastmith Bay all these documents. And he believes that they're real and they're going to attack on Gaza. But Eastmith Bay is a little bit concerned, and he doesn't really actually think that this is true. He thinks that maybe there's going to be a surprise attack in Beersheba, which I love this sort of scene that we transition to here.
Yes, you know, he is very, very suspicious of these letters that just came in seemingly out of nowhere. But and if Schiller had listened to Colonel Eastmith Bay, well, then, you know, the episode would have turned out in a very, very different way. But unfortunately, Schiller is not very bright, at least in this part, and he's like, oh, we'll be fine. And so they, you know, they alert Gaza that there's going to be an attack on Gaza, and that's really, really cool.
Yeah, I did like this as well, kind of transitioning back and forth. We see this a lot, you know, kind of transitioning to what eventually happens in Beersheba to where they are in Gaza. And I love this scene here, yeah, with Colonel Eastmith Bay, Daniel Craig, or sorry, Schiller, in which, you know, they're talking about this. And I really, really like how there's this conflict between them. You know, and it really adds a nice dynamic to the episode, how Schiller kind of is on his own almost. You know, Colonel Eastmith Bay is obviously his superior, but there is a lot of conflict between them. And I really thought that that added to the characterization and sort of the arrogance a little bit of Schiller that we see, which leads to that climactic end of the episode. Really liked it.
Yes, I do. And transitioning kind of into the next scene, Indy is in this bar and there actually a fight almost breaks out.
Right, and I love this opening scene here when Indy really finally gets to meet Jack and Dex here and talks with Ned there, when they finally decided, you know, that they're going to take this trek across the desert, you know, 50,000 men, and so Indy and, you know, Ned, they go to this, you know, kind of bar, I guess, or restaurant over there, and they really start talking, you know, kind of, we have that theme, you know, that musical cue that alludes to My First Adventure, as he's like, oh, I still remember giving you those ghost stories and the pyramids of Egypt, you know, all that kind of stuff. I really enjoyed that. And we see the British and the Australians kind of starting to fight here. And, you know, they're starting to kind of one-up each other. And, you know, they're on the same side. Keep that in mind. And I love how Ned just grabs a spoon and taps the glass and is like, ding, ding, ding. And he's like, I think I have an idea that might settle this. And we transition into a rugby game.
Right, which I think is really, really interesting. I actually at first thought it was football, which football and rugby are very, very similar. There are obviously some differences. But, and I guess you consider rugby is basically football in the desert, at least it is in this episode.
Right.
So, you know, they settle it with a rugby game. And I think that's really, really cool because it's kind of bringing almost an American tradition to where Indy is. So that's very, very cool.
Ooh, that's a great point. And it did remind me of Trenches of Hell when they played tennis. Kind of a similar situation, you know, when there was Jocks over there who was very arrogant and they settled it over tennis. Really liked kind of a little bit of an ode to that. Not sure if that was intentional or just happened to be like that. Similar situation and kind of this idea of playing a fun game. The camaraderie of it is really fun. And we transition into this next fantastic scene, this beautiful sunset. There are some great shots of the sunset here. You really have to keep that in mind. I mean, it does kind of go back to My First Adventure, that thematic element of it. Really, really enjoyed it as we see Indy talking with the Australians and find out that they've kind of been in reserve this whole time and really aren't getting a chance to fight.
Yeah, you know, they're sitting around talking and they're like, well, you know, they basically are kind of talking around how Even though we're tech, you know, they're technically part of the British Army because Australia, I don't know if at this time they're still part of the UK or not, if they're still part of Great Britain or not, but they're basically saying, oh, but they'll never put us out on the field, which, you know, they basically say that they're just in the war because they have to be. They don't really, they're not actually really doing anything. But, you know, contrary to what Indy thinks, you know, they want to be in the war, and people who are in the war don't want to be in the war. It's kind of the opposite.
Yeah, I love that juxtaposition there as well. You know, usually you'd think, you know, the Australian Light Horsemen, they're just kind of getting to sit out and they're upset about it. You know, the British regiment doesn't believe that the Australian Light Horsemen just that they don't really have the power to fight, I guess, but they're in this war anyway. And Indy brings up, he's like, you guys are great cavalry. He's like, we're mounted infantry, very different. And we see that towards that ending battle there, when this idea of mounted infantry and how that really puts a surprise on the Turks and the Germans there. So there's this next great scene in which Dex challenges Indy to this sort of horse race here. And of course, great throwback to Last Crusade there, as of course we see Indy riding a horse like he always does. And I think I mentioned this before. I'm not sure if this was for every episode, but supposedly, I remember reading this somewhere, that horse is in fact Hurricane, which is the horse that Harrison Ford used in Last Crusade. I'm not sure if it's for every episode or just some of the episodes. I don't remember what the horse actually looks like, but that is kind of cool that they had that mode of continuity.
Yeah, I wonder how old, actually, now that gets me curious, I wonder how old horses can live to be, because, you know, that would be very, very cool if it is the same horse, and it may be. It does look very similar, I'll give them that. And, you know, this scene is so cool because, you know, this is, I guess, where we really see the first time Indy riding a horse real fast like he does in Last Crusade, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah, and I love this bonding moment too between Indy and the Australians, which gives a great sort of characterization for the rest of the episode. And yeah, that great shot of them just riding across the beach there, love that. It was so fun, especially Indy. You know, he thinks he can take this on, but of course, Dex is super fast and you know, with his great horse. And I love that scene. Absolutely fantastic. And then we transition into another great kind of scene here when Indy and Ned talk. And this is what I was saying kind of previously. I wonder if this was actually added later in the re-edits or not, because the music from My First Adventure is reused here, and and Indy looks a little bit older. So I'm wondering maybe if this was originally in Palestine or not. Very interesting.
It's very interesting, the bonding moment they have here, because, you know, Indy is kind of, you know, saying that he tells, you know, Ned asks if he's scared, and he's like, oh, just a little bit. Okay, maybe a lot, you know. Indy, you know, we see Indy as this fearless leader who, you know, is not scared of anything, but, you know, here he's kind of, you know, talking with Ned about how he's scared. He doesn't know if he'll make it, you know, how the entire, like, you know, survival of those wells depends on Indy. And, you know, then they also kind of, you know, talk about how Ned is called the Lawrence of Arabia, and Ned's like, ah, psh. You know, like, he's been doing his part in the war, and that he has done his part, and now it's time for him to go back to whatever else he was doing.
Yeah, I really love this scene here when they talk about a Lawrence of Arabia. I really like the choice of dialogue there by the great Frank Darabont, who really put that in there to talk about sort of Ned's sort of famous persona, I guess you could say. You know, Indy knows him as Ned, but he's really known to us as the viewers as T.E. Lawrence or Lawrence of Arabia. And I really like how Ned sort of denies that sort of title and this sort of, he's very modest about it and doesn't believe that it's true. And I really enjoyed that they added that in there. And again, nice callback to some earlier episodes with this bonding moment that they have together. And Ned's voice is very inspiring, by the way. Like, I'm listening to this and I'm like, wow, you know, like his voice is very inspiring, which is kind of funny. And again, this idea of the crackling fire. The idea of the history, we see all those kind of pillars there, kind of that archaeological ruin, I guess you could say. And yeah, just Ned kind of says he doesn't really like the glory of it. And, you know, the desert is the most wonderful and terrible place on earth. You know, that juxtaposition there as India is getting ready to go out the next day. And yeah, so we move into the next scene, which is hilarious as Ned comes in and just dumps the whole bowl of water on India to wake him up.
Yes, and speaking of Indy being at the camp and Ned dumping the water, one, that's a hilarious scene, but two, you see Indy get out of the tent, and I wanted to note something here, and I paused the episode because I couldn't put my finger on it, but then I noticed it. If you look, they're at the camp, but you can also see the, you know, kind of the desert hills in the background. And that's actually a matte painting. If you look very closely, you definitely notice it's a matte painting and not on. So it's I don't know if they actually created a set for the camp or if they actually filmed it on location or something like that, but the background is definitely a matte painting.
Wow, I didn't catch any matte paintings in this episode. Nice catch there. That's interesting. That probably means it's that the scene was added later. Yeah, but great eye there. Yeah, and I love those matte paintings. I mean, at sometimes you can obviously tell and it ruins sort of the authenticity of it. But at other times, it is kind of a nice added benefit. I mean, technology in the early 90s, that's kind of what they were experimenting with. And so, yeah, I think that's pretty cool. There's matte paintings in there. And yeah, so Indy kind of learns about his assignment here, and he's going to be disguised as a merchant. And is going to work with Maya. Indy likes this idea. Think his opinion turned right around after he found out he was going to be working with Maya.
He's like, "Oh, woman, things just got interesting," is what he says. And I'm
Right,
like,
literally.
my head just, I'm like, "Oh gosh, Indy, we already know the history with Indian women, and it doesn't get better from here."
Right, literally. I mean, yeah. I mean, no surprise there, not going to lie. And then, of course, Indy has lunch with Jack and Dex. And, I like this quote that Dex says here. He says, "What do you need to get into the French intelligence?" I'm just thinking to myself, back to Attack of the Hawkmen, and said, "All you need is forgeries and Indy around in order to get in." It's hilarious. I love how he asks it so seriously. And then, yeah, every time I think about that, I'm like, wow, Indy just forged his way in here, like, and no one figured it out. Or actually, well, yeah, they figured it out, but they just said, "Welcome to the Belgian army, no big deal." Oh, that was hilarious.
Well,
And,
one, he forged his way into the Belgian army by lying that his name was Henry Defons, but his mother's name was Anna Jones. That doesn't make sense. And then he just like basically deserted the Belgian army and forged his way right into the French intelligence. And they figured that out, but they're like, "You know what? We take all the help we can get. Welcome to the French intelligence."
Right, literally, he just forged his way into both of them. I mean, it's hilarious, and but I mean, I mean, he currently lived up to his expectations. I mean, we've seen these episodes in which Indy is put in tough situations, and he definitely is here. And Indy shows a lot of maturity in this episode, which I really like. We've talked about this before, especially with Phantom Train of Doom, and some of these earlier episodes. He has shown a lot of maturity here, which I really, really enjoy. And I like this added part here in which Indy actually mentions a unproduced episode of Young Indy. He mentions actually that he's been to Australia before and flew in a plane with Harry Houdini, which is actually not an episode in the show, but rather one that was supposed to be produced. And so my guess is that George Lucas kind of threw that little hint in there as kind of one of his original episode ideas, which I really enjoyed.
That would be, I would love to see. This is a little bit off topic, but I would love to see all the unproduced episodes get produced and watch them and just see like where they would fit in between all the episodes of Young Indy.
Oh, that would be fantastic. I would love to see these produced. Of course, now it would feel a lot different with the show, but oh my gosh, yeah, what I would give to have this show go on for another season back in the 90s. I mean, there were so many interesting stories. We'll obviously talk about that in a separate episode later, but I love these small mentions in the actual episodes themselves to earlier ideas to episodes with Harry Houdini here. Yeah, so the next scene here transitions into the actual long ride across the desert here.
Yes, and right before that, Indy says a tearful goodbye to Ned. This is the last time we ever see Ned in Young Indy, unfortunately. I mean, he's mentioned basically from My First Adventure all the way up until a couple episodes ago when he's writing to Ned, but we actually see him in this episode, and even like halfway through the episode, Indy has to say goodbye to him.
Yeah, he does. I like how they kind of treat it as a last goodbye here. We obviously see him come back in Winds of Change for a little bit. But I do like how, yeah, they kind of treat it as a last goodbye. We as the viewer, the first time, yeah, like you said, think that this is the last time we're ever going to see him. And then he does come back in a later episode. So I really enjoyed that kind of heartfelt goodbye there. He says, "I need to go back to my part of the war." And I really want to make note of how Ned calls him Indy here, not Henry. He calls him Indy. Really, really enjoyed that there, that heartfelt moment at the end, right when Indy meets Maya and says goodbye to Ned there. I love scenes like that. And of course, Indy has been writing to him throughout all these episodes, and we finally get to see him here. And then he leaves shortly after. So that was a fantastic scene. Very well done.
Yes, and oh, something I forgot to mention. Ned mentions Miss Seymour and asks how she's doing, and Indy kind of talks about writing to her from time to time, but never writing to his father.
Oh, that's a great point. Yeah, we forgot to bring that up. I really like how they mentioned Miss Seymour there and never writing to his father. And he's like, we've never had much to say to each other. And Ned's like, well, that's not all of his fault. And Indy kind of thinks to himself there. So I really like that as well, that added moment with, writing to his father and then Miss Seymour as well. I did like that.
Yes, and the first scene of them riding through the desert, Indy is very stern and feisty because he asks Maya, "Ooh, are you ever gonna show me your face?" And she's like, "No." And she asks Indy where they're going, but because she's a double agent, she wants to warn them. But Indy kind of is like, he's like, "That's on a need to know basis." And right as they're there, it's like, "Well, now you gotta tell me." And he's like, "We're going to Beersheba."
Yeah, it's very, very interesting here. I like how this dynamic between Indy and Maya does develop throughout the episode, especially here with, that's a need to know basis. I really enjoyed that. They have that campfire there. And meanwhile, we cut to that scene in which the Australian Light Horsemen and the British regiment there are all alerted that they're actually going to be going to Beersheba. 2 days, 50,000 men, only one canteen of water each. I really, really like this kind of back and forth that we see from now on, Indy and Maya getting to Beersheba, and then also the Australians getting to Beersheba as well. Very well done.
Yes, and then we kind of transition into the next scene where they encounter some outsiders, and Indy and Maya are kind of trying to figure out what they're gonna do because they don't know if they're outsiders, if they're Turks or what. But they, they end up coming down and kind of wanting Indy to basically hand over everything they own, and he mentions the Turks, which does not go over so well with them, and Maya kind of, gives them the stink eye and says, "Why would you ever mention them?"
Right, exactly. So there's like these outcasts that are here. I think this was also probably an added scene in terms of the original episode for Palestine. That's my guess. But yeah, this was kind of an interesting scene as obviously Indy learns kind of how the Turks are a great threat in this area. He also pulls off a great accent, by the way. That was kind of fun to see. I really enjoyed that. And I did really like how this kind of last scene here, when they're like, "We'll take the camel and Maya." And he's like, "Uh-oh." And there's that whole scene there where he tries to, keep Maya, and then he just moves on his own without him. And I really like that scene. And then we see Maya come back eventually. But I really like that kind of nice sunset as well as Indy goes off. And then the next morning, Maya catches up to him. That was a cool scene.
Right, and as Maya catches up to him, it's like, well, she says that that she gave them a sleeping potion that'll knock them out for at least one more hour. He's like, "That's not that long." It's like, "Oh, don't worry, they won't catch up. I took their clothes," and she just starts tossing them off the camel, which I think is
Right.
really hilarious. And Indy just, kind of laughs and moves on, which I think is really, really cool. And right after that, they talk about that there is a sandstorm coming, right? And they don't know what to do because if they keep going the way they're going, they're obviously going to hit the sandstorm, right? But then they notice this rickety rope bridge, as I like to call it, which gives me flashbacks to Temple of Doom. And something I wanted to mention right off the bat, it looks completely different than Temple of Doom, but in a way it's the same. They have to cross it, but things don't go so well.
Yeah, I love, we've talked about this in so many episodes now. The comics bring this up, the video games bring this up. People love that idea of the rope bridge in Temple of Doom for some reason. It's just a fun action set piece. It's all throughout the expanded universe, and it's here yet again. If you look at it, yeah, it does look a little bit different, but if you look at the bridge and how long it is, it looks exactly the same. And of course, Indy's looking down it. And again, foreshadowing to kind of like the movies. I love kind of stuff like that that's added in there. I'm curious as to whether that was an original scene or not, because if they added that afterwards, that was very clever. And I really think that's awesome, especially it's super rickety. And Indy is like, "Well, we have to cross it." And I'm like, "Indy, use a little bit of sense. I don't think you get two camels across that bridge and you and Maya." And of course, we see then the Turks come right away as Indy's kind of carrying all these pots and pans and the stuff they brought with him. Kind of, I love the shots that they show of like his feet and him shaking and how wobbly that bridge is, and then the boards that crack from under him. Ooh, really like that suspense there.
Yeah, it's very, very, it's very different. And Indy, like, is hanging on by a thread, and a bunch of his stuff actually drops. But, Maya, Indy is shooting at them, and he only gets one guy before he falls. And so Maya is just, she's going to town with these guys, and finally ends up, wounding the last guy or killing him. I'm not sure. We just see him fall behind the rock. And, you know, Indy finally gets up and he gets across to mine and he's like, nice shot.
Yeah, I love this scene as well, as Indy kind of here is the one who, you know, is desperately hanging on for his life, while Maya here is, you know, grabbing all the Turks that are coming after them. I really like that scene that they shot as well, as they're kind of shooting after Indy and he's literally hanging by a thread. I mean, you can see how thin that kind of rope is there. That was a great scene as he finally pulls himself up and then they run across. How fantastic.
Right. I thought that was really, really cool because, you know, we just don't see, there's action scenes at the very end, but we don't see a lot of action scenes, especially when they're in the desert when he's with Maya. There's not a lot of action scenes. I mean, there's a little bit of action with those, you know, outcasts, but other than that, there's not really all that much. So this really kind of brings some flair and gets you, you know, so you're not just like, oh, they're going through a desert. You're like, ooh, what's about to happen?
Yeah, absolutely. They add that sort of element to it. And I really like as well how there's a lot of backstory here. And especially how we really don't get a full insight into who Maya, like, truly is until this kind of later part of the episode in which they really start having a lot more dialogue together. But I like the introduction of this, as Maya doesn't seem like a double agent at all. You know, all of this was planned so carefully, and the characterization between them develops so well that I think, you know, despite the fact that this is a little bit dragged out, this whole kind of scene of them going across the desert, I think it does add a very important aspect to the episode that I really enjoyed. And again, scenes like that, you know, giving us an ode to Temple of Doom and that suspense kind of in the middle, I really, really enjoyed it.
Yes, I really love that. And, you know, then we actually transition into a scene inside Beersheba.
Yeah, I love this transition of a scene here. The first time of many in these episodes where we transition into kind of three separate aspects. Schiller and Eastmit Bay in Beersheba themselves, Indy and Maya. And then, of course, the Australian Light Horseman with the British Regiment there as well. Really enjoyed that. And again, we see Schiller here. He has that great quote. And by the way, I love Daniel Craig's role in this. I love him as an actor. He's absolutely fantastic. But I love his role in this. This was like, I remember looking this up on IMDb once. I think this was like his like sixth or seventh ever role. He started acting in like 1990. So like this literally was like one of his first ever roles. And he just did an absolutely phenomenal job. His accent was fantastic. He's got that mustache as well, which is great. And, you know, this quote he says, oh, the heat is unbearable. And, you know, meanwhile, they're rigging the wells as kind of like a precaution just in case. You know, Eastmit Bay is very adamant about this whole plan. You know, Schiller kind of thinks it's all wrapped up. They're going to really attack Gaza. And of course, Eastmit Bay is very adamant about it. So he does tell him to rig the wells here with kind of these explosives, which is a new added element that we see in the end of the episode, which is kind of cool as well. And meanwhile, Jack and Dex and everyone else is halfway there, and they finally realize their objective is Beersheba, which is kind of interesting that they actually didn't tell them their objective the entire time. Very interesting.
Right. You know, we see that, and it's just very interesting that they don't, you know, notice that. And, you know, something I also like is that Daniel Craig plays a great role here. You know, he actually does not, I mean, he's a British actor, but he has a completely different accent here, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, I did notice that as well. It's really awesome, especially like he's so famous for James Bond nowadays. Seeing him in this role, I thought was fun. And, you know, it does kind of, you can call it the Indiana Jones versus James Bond cameo, if you will, because, you know, it is so fun. We know him so famously from that role. It adds so much of a new aspect to it, especially like you said, with the accent there. Really, really awesome. So the next scene transitions here into when Indy and Maya actually arrive in the town of Beersheba, and Indy poses as a trader in fine goods, and he meets his contact Kazim. And I was very curious right off the bat here, what was the deal with Kazim here? Obviously it's not the same guy from Last Crusade. Interesting name choice there.
No, it's definitely not, but I think that it's really, really cool that, you know, they put it there, and I think it's definitely a reference to Last Crusade. As I said, you know, there's references to all three movies here. We've already seen the first two, and, you know, now there's this third reference here, and I think that's really, really cool that they added this in here. And so I think that's just a reference. Other than that, I don't think there's any reason his name is Kazim.
Yeah, it's kind of a similar situation to Kurt Vogel from one of the comics, the Further Adventures series. I think that was the same situation there, in which that was not Vogel from Last Crusade, but rather just someone else named Vogel. And so, yeah, I guess they just did that to Yeah, I guess just give you a little bit of a hint to the movies. I mean, it's not really a hint that much as it is just the same name. But I did like it. You know, it added kind of a fun element to it, being called Kazim. Of course, very famous from that Venice boat scene in Last Crusade. And I really love this close-up on Schiller here as he gives Indy this very harsh look. Ooh, that just really got me on the edge of my seat there. As you can tell, kind of Schiller's feisting this there as, you know, he tells it, as Kazim tells him, you know, that they've rigged the wells and, you know, Eastmont Bey is focusing all of his attack on Gaza. And they send that message to them by Pigeon as well.
Right, which I think is really, really cool. You know, we don't see Pigeons so much in the you know, Young Indy at all. And we also think, you know, Pigeon messengers are just in cartoons. But no, that's actually what they did use in the war because they had no... I mean, it would take days by mail to get back, but a Pigeon, it could only take a couple hours.
Right, yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, I do like how, again, the authenticity of the war during this time, especially, like, the little things, too. Especially, like, in Prague, you know, bureaucracy during this time had changed so much. And that's not something that is, like... really told all that much when we think of this idea of World War One, and here it was elaborated on in the show. So little things like that, again, giving us that feel of the war. And so we transition into the next scene here in which Indy, of course, has been posing as a trader in fine goods this entire time, and Maya's posing as a belly dancer to supposedly kind of, you know, trick, you know, Eastmont Bey at this time. Of course, Indy thinks that's what it is, and finally gets to see her. And this is actually Catherine Zeta-Jones, the actress. And of course, Indy is in awe the entire time and adds to a little bit of a lack of clarity on Indy's part, as we could say.
Also, you know, this is, Indy is, you know, he's with this guy and, you know, he doesn't even reveal his, you know, real... He still is kind of doing the accent he did when they met the outcast until they finally, you know, kind of leave the restaurant. And he's like, they, you know, he kind of reveals himself and he's like, oh, you know, we know that's when we kind of find out Kazim is his contact.
Ooh, that's a great point, actually. I like how you bring that up, especially when they give each other that huge hug at the beginning, right? They really did a great job of fooling Schiller and the audience as well to kind of give us this idea of, you know, they know each other. And, you know, Schiller, you know, cracks a little bit of a laugh there. And yeah, in the restaurant too, Indy's, you know, trying to like sell people watches and stuff. I love that. And this to me, again, I elaborate on this a little bit, the character development here. I love that we finally get to learn a little bit more about Maya as we continue going out throughout this episode, right? And again, we have this sort of love interest that's added as she's, you know, the double agent. And really, really cool scene as, you know, she's, of course, you know, there's this sort of espionage act as we see she gives Eastmont Bey this, like, scarf with this hidden piece of paper in it. Meanwhile, right, she's trying to, you know, dance to get Indy to, you know, fall in love with her a little bit, I guess you could say, and, you know, be attracted to her. So there's that whole aspect of both of those that I really like.
Right, you know, Indy is stunned by Maya in this, and we don't even know that Maya's a double agent yet. We don't find that out until, you know, the three Turkish guys, they go outside, they open the scarf, and he says, well, she still doesn't know where the attack is coming from. And I think that's really cool that, you know, we think Maya is, you know, really nice and a really perfect guy for Indy up until right about then, which is very interesting that she kept up the act for this long.
Yeah, I really did like that. And one thing that I thought was very interesting, as we see, obviously, Indy and Kazim talk about kind of in this small room with this. I love, by the way, the feel of this episode as well. These kind of interior spaces, the light is very, very well done. The cinematography of the sunset, just the time of day is so well done here in terms of the way how they shot this. Very well done. And I love this scene here in which they talk about where they're going to cut the wires and the detonation point for all of the wells. And then we see Indy actually go out to the Well of Abraham with Maya. And Maya says something that I thought was very interesting. She's like, you're very, very stubborn, and, you know, about not telling Maya where the actual attack is coming from. And here is where she tries to sway Indy, right? They have that moment in which they kiss. And I love how she says this, by the way. She's like, you know, Indy's like, you're so beautiful. And she's like, I know. And that was pretty funny. And yeah, again, she really tries to sway Indy in this one, as Indy hasn't told her where the attack is this entire time.
Yeah, I mean, Maya basically seduces Indy to find out where the attack is coming from.
Right, that's literally the point of this, yeah.
She's like, come on with me, and I'm like, oh, geez. Because, you know, this is how Indy is with women. He finds one, they, you know, make out, they, you know, they're like, oh, they're so in love, and then Indy is completed his mission, he's like, okay, bye.
Yeah, Indy literally did not learn his lesson from this episode, because we see this happen with Elsa in Last Crusade, so he didn't learn his lesson at all, which is just hilarious. And I really like this added element here of Maya in the story. And finally, he tells her that the attack is here at Beersheba. And that's when things turn quickly right there as we have this next scene, which is the Light Horseman shot from the movie I was talking about from 1987, Simon Winsor's The Light Horseman. That shot is right there. And I love that scene. We see this kind of this one sort of plateau of the desert, and then this line of cavalry just immediately come up from the edge there. Love that scene. Super, super cool as Eastmont Bay finally thinks the attack is here.
Right. And, you know, the Australians, this is the Australians, and they, I guess they've lived up to their list, and they finally wanted to fight, but the British were never going to put them out there. But here they are, you know?
Right. And I do like this as well, as we have this great scene here in which Indy finally gets betrayed by Maya as he sends out this pigeon with the note, and then she pulls out this revolver and just shoots it. And we turn back and we see all of these guards just standing up to him and that close-up on Maya's face there. That was a great scene. Really loved the quick turn of espionage that they had to throw in there.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I love how they throw that in there. Also, I love, this is kind of, you know, we right after that, we kind of Maya kind of finally reveals to Indy that she is a double agent, because even though we know she's a double agent, Indy, you know, is going to warn them that they have backup here, and he, you know, lets the pigeon out, and Maya just shoots him, and all the guys come running in.
Right, and then we transition into kind of the last big section of this episode, which is just so well done. There's so much high, fast-paced action, and the espionage here. One of my favorite scenes from this episode happens right here, as we see all of them kind of in this same room together with Schiller here, you know, with Kazim as well, because there's that scene in which, you know, Kazim was trying to go cut the wires and then gets knocked out. And then he's also brought in prisoner here, as Indy is. So when Indy is captured, I love how Kazim really is kind of the focal point of this scene here, as he tells Schiller a lie. And Indy puts a knife in him, but it's a fake knife. I really love this. This actually completely fooled me the first time I watched this episode.
Oh, yeah.
I love the fake ploy in this, as, of course, Maya tells Schiller that the real attack is at Beersheba. And then Schiller captured Kazim, and Kazim lies for Indy, and they use that fake knife trick as well. And Schiller's arrogance in this is great. You know, it's too late, spy, you know, all this sort of stuff. I love Schiller in this episode. He's just a great character, really, really fantastic.
Right, and actually, I have not watched this episode in over a year, so when I saw him, you know, stab Kazim, I thought it was real for the, you know, first 5 minutes before he suddenly comes back alive.
Right, I really like that as well, that added element. I was, yeah, confused by this the first time as well. I love how, because it really works perfectly. It's so well done, and Indy is very convincing about it as well. And, you know, Schiller is so, so fixated on this idea that it is Gaza, right? That one document, you know, was all from Colonel Meinertzhagen, you know? All from that one ploy, Schiller is so fixated on the fact that this attack has to be at Gaza, and I love that they added that element into it. Yeah, there's just some great dialogue there with Schiller and Eastmont Bay and everyone, and we finally realize that they're not sending the reinforcements to Beersheba, and we see that there's this scene in which they're kind of figuring out what to do. The British actually fall back, and the original attack is not good, and Schiller thinks that originally it's just kind of a distraction. You know, the real attack is at Gaza, but they're here, and we finally see this great scene in which sort of the commander here, played by Colin Baker, you know, they finally talk about how it's time to give the Australian Light Horsemen a real chance at this battle here.
Yes, they're like, finally, we're going to get to fight, you know? And, you know, it's kind of like almost kind of like a joyous, happy moment just for a second there, as the Australians realize they are a crucial part of this war.
Yeah, there's that great scene which Jack talks to Dex. He's like, we're going in, we're taking Beersheba. And, you know, they're, you know, so super happy there. And I love that great quote there. He's like, our men could take that town. It's a mounted charge. The Turks wouldn't expect it, you know. And this idea of them being mounted infantry, right? Everyone thinks they're cavalry, but they're mounted infantry. And so I love this idea that, you know, this has never been done before. You know, we can't trust the Australian light horsemen, mounted infantry, to go take that town of Beersheba. And I love this quote. He says, "Perhaps because it's never been tried." Love that quote right there as we see that close-up of Jack and, you know, he has that little smile on his face.
And after Kazim has helped Indy escape, him and Kazim go to, and they start cutting the wires for all the wells. And once they've cut most of them, right, then they see the mountaintop attack coming, right? And you see them, and they start, as we see, we transition back to the point of view from the Australian on the front, and they jump over all the guns who are kind of shooting at them, which is really, really cool.
Yeah, there's this amazing, fantastic action set piece here that I love. There's this idea of sort of they're coming so fast, and, you know, since they're cavalry, they think they're going to stop. And this whole kind of a trickery of the mounted infantry kind of comes in. The Turks are not expecting this at all. And they just completely charge and charge and charge. And we see them lower the artillery. And actually, when they fire the artillery, it actually goes over the horses, actually. There's that great scene there. And yeah, Dex yells, "First one over the trench wins," right? And there's that great, you know, Australian light horseman theme that plays there. And I love that scene. The cinematography, oh, there's that great scene in which we see the fast cuts moving back and forth from that one guy, you know, rolling the level on the artillery, and then the horses, like, running up to the front. Oh, and they switch back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. I love that scene. It's super, super cool, the cinematography.
Yeah, I think I also thought that was really, really awesome that they, you know, did that, because, you know, they see them just rolling back and rolling back, and, you know, this is really a cool scene, especially I love the camera when they're jumping over the guns, because we're just looking down as, like, panning over the top of the trench, and that arc is just super duper cool and really awesome.
Yeah, that was another great aspect of the cinematography here that's really cool. Yeah, when they show them, like, just jumping over there. And meanwhile, Colonel Eastmont Bay kind of figures out this whole knife ploy that's been going on. And there's this whole kind of idea of Schiller in the room. And I love this next scene here in which he almost pretends to, like, stab him with a knife.
Right. You know, he's like, "Ah." And Schiller's like, "Huh?" And he's like, "The knife was fake, you fool." You know, he kind of says. And he sends Schiller to fetch someone. I'm not sure who, though. And I love the scene where they figure that out, because he's like, you know, he realized that the wires have been cut, right? And he's like, "How?" You know, he was dead. I love the cinematography there where the blood just drips all over the paper. That's really cool.
Oh, yeah, that was really cool. And you could tell that Eastmont Bay is furious about this. And he's like, "You know, what are you babbling about, you know, Schiller?" And he's like, "Oh, an old proverb came to mind." And he just grabs the knife and just stabs him. And that was a really cool scene there. I love that knife ploy there. Really, really great acting there. And a super cool kind of, you know, fake knife that they had. And yeah, and so he yells, "Just blow up the wells." And it transitions again into the mounted charge there. And we actually see kind of this sad scene in which actually Dex actually gets shot and falls off his horse there. And we see actually that his horse makes it first to the trench, which I thought was such a cool scene, because obviously we know that Dex loves his horse.
Yeah, and it's very unfortunate, but Dex doesn't actually make it, but his horse makes it over, and, you know, Dex always wanted to be in part of the war, and he was, and his horse continues on his legacy, I guess you could say, by jumping over the trench. He's the first one that gets over the trench.
Yeah, a really heartfelt scene there. It was very, very well done. And speaking of which, one thing I noticed from this episode immediately right off the bat, this is one of the only episodes that has so much fast-paced action at the end of the episode. You know, usually there's action in a lot of these episodes, you know, but the end of this episode really kicked it up a notch in terms of giving us just scenes and scenes and scenes from here, from there, and all over the place in terms of combining to this grand finale. I mean, we see lots of stuff going on when they arrive at Beersheba, when Indy is kind of working behind the scenes with this espionage thing, and it's just really, really fantastic.
Yeah, it's really cool. And also something I wanted to mention, they actually, they are going to rewire it, and, you know, they actually, Indy and Kazim say they need to make it into the office to disconnect the wires fully.
Yeah, Indy remembered that switchboard when they actually went and saw Schiller and Eastman Bay earlier, and he says that controls all the wells. And there's this great scene, which is very intense, in which they try to rewire the wells, and Maya and Schiller are there, and he grabs this machine gun, and they start shooting at him, and Indy grabs his revolver. By the way, this is one of the like first times that Indy like truly uses a revolver in this show, by the way. We've seen that in a lot of other stuff, like the comics and the video games, but here, this is the first time he like prominently uses the revolver, which I thought was kind of cool. And he also doesn't have his hat on either, which I thought is very interesting to mention. Indy does not have his fedora on really at all in this entire episode. Really, really a cool, interesting costume choice here, as he has this revolver, but no fedora at all.
Yeah, it's very interesting. He has the revolver, but not the fedora. You know, we mentioned earlier in the episode that he, you know, was wearing the hat that he was wearing in My First Adventure, but nope. Here he, you know, he's not wearing, is he wearing a hat at this point? I don't think so. But he actually ends up wounding Maya in this, which, you know, we're like, oh, well, Indy was in love with Maya, but not anymore.
Right, exactly. Yeah, there's this great scene in which Indy and Kazim are fighting against Schiller, and I love this sort of scene here where Schiller's like, you have captured nothing, not a drop of water. And then we see Jack just storm in with the cavalry right over Schiller. As, you know, he starts raging, you know, blow up the wells, and Indy starts to chase after him, which leads to this very interesting scene as Indy storms in and shoots the guard and kind of has Schiller with his hands up there.
And this is really when the main fight scene of the end of the episode happens here. You know, Schiller has his hands up, but then he kicks the gun out of Indy's hands. You know, they kind of go into a fist fight where they're each one of them are trying to grab the gun. You know, Schiller has the gun for one point, then Indy, you know, knocks him over and grabs it. And it's, this whole fight scene is really, really cool, and really more action than we see in the entire first half of basically in the entire episode. This one scene is like the most action-packed, in my opinion.
Yeah, I remember reading that there was an interview with Simon Windsor once, who directed this episode, and he actually said that this fight scene was actually never in the original script, but George Lucas wanted to add it at the end because he thought the episode needed a little bit, of extra something at the end there. And surely they chose a very interesting fight scene, the Indiana Jones and James Bond cameo here. This is one of my favorite scenes in all of Young Indy. It's absolutely fantastic. Daniel Craig did such a fantastic performance in this. The stunts are really great too. The sound effects are a little funny because they sound a little fake, but it's still just a great fight scene here. The stunt's fantastic. Indy kicks him, you know, they throw the chair over. The music is fantastic, which we'll talk about next week, of course. Just this climactic set piece, this intense, good acting, the practical and physical effects, you know, as he grabs him and throws Indy over his shoulder, and just this awesome fight. And I love that jump kick that he does as he hangs onto that, like, bar above him. That, to me, was Harrison Ford.
Yeah, that was really cool. I mean, you know, again, you know, I mean, this is supposed to evolve, quote-unquote, into Harrison Ford, as we know Indy, because this is young Indy, and I think he did a really good job of doing that here.
Yeah, absolutely, and especially as you get to this last part of the scene, where Schiller just runs and decides to blow up the wells, and he's like, no, and he, you know, slides on the floor, grabs the gun, and this scene here, I thought was super interesting on two levels. One, Schiller actually tries to blow up the wells, and two, Indy actually shoots him, which I thought was such an interesting scene. Didn't expect that from either of them, to be honest.
Yeah, same. And, you know, this is actually when we see Indy shoot him just in the nick of time. Like, even one more, you know, Kazim comes in and he's like, you saved him just in the nick of time. 1/4 more of an inch and those wells would have been gone.
And yeah, keep in mind, Indy was inches away from potentially having this entire mission compromised. 50,000 men, his job was to get to Beersheba and keep the wells intact. And as we talked about, water was the difference between life and death. This is this element of the episode that I really enjoyed. Not only do we have this espionage and this sort of military kind of aspect, but this sort of secret idea of water and how that's such an important factor in this sort of setting and climate, and Indy's in charge of it. And So yeah, so after that great Indiana Jones and James Bond fight scene, I guess you could say, we see Indy talk to Jack at the end there with this great last sort of heartfelt scene here as, you know, he mentions, you know, we lost Dex coming in, but his horse made it first to the trenches. He would have liked that. And I love that scene there. It's just fantastic. And Indy's like, only 31 casualties. That's got to be some kind of miracle. And, you know, he says, come on, fellas, let's drink this place dry. And we have that last scene of, you know, them talking about they're going to be in Jerusalem by Christmas and all of the horses getting some ample water and everyone kind of relaxing at that last scene there, which transitions into the end credits of the episode.
And I really love that last scene there. It's very heartfelt that, you know, Indy finds out that he lost Dex, but, you know, it works out, you know, he kind of, you know, is thinking that, oh, well, you know, we lost Dex, but we, you know, kind of succeeded in the overall mission, which is good. And this is what Dex would have wanted. He wouldn't have wanted just to survive, but he also wanted the mission to be complete and to be part of the you know, military and be part of the war, and he was. And, you know, it's a very heartfelt moment, and then we kind of transition into the black and white credits.
Yeah, and that tops off Daredevils of the Desert, a fantastic episode with lots going on. What do we think of this one?
You know, I like this episode a lot. I forgot how much I like this episode, and there's many reasons, but my main reason for liking this episode is, one, all the famous actors. I mean, we have Daniel Craig, we have Ned that returns, we have so many different, you know, actors that, you know, are very famous in this. But again, I also love kind of the Maya double agent thing, because, you know, we don't really see, you know, a double agent happening at really in any of the other Young Indy episodes besides this one, right? And, you know, Maya, you know, really convinces Indy that, you know, she's not a double agent, or Indy doesn't even, you know, catch on a hint until the very last second.
I completely agree. I think this episode was so well done on so many levels. It has such a great combination of, like you said, sort of the conflict with the Ottoman Empire here, right? This espionage with Maya being a double agent, you know, then with Schiller at the end there. Then this sort of story of how the Australian Light Horsemen got their chance in this battle here, you know, this Palestine conflict here. You know, there's a very, this last 20 minutes of the episode is one of the best, you know, parts of probably the entire show. I mean, it's so well done. I love the high, fast-paced action. And the thematic element of this and the style is so different. And for those of you who have been watching this, or if you've been maybe re-watching the show with us as we talk about these, and you have the DVD box sets, this is actually the end of the war years. And I always like to kind of summarize the war years when I think of this episode, because we have learned so much about World War I. And it is just absolutely insane what this show was going to accomplish. We had the Battle of Somme, the Battle of Verdun, the conflict in Africa, right? The Bolshevik Revolution, Charles Nungesser and the Lafayette Escadrille in France, you know, bureaucracy, kind of Spain being neutral, the Palestine conflict. I mean, we've gone through every single, you know, main event and sort of underrated story in World War I. And this episode always reminds me of just the entire big picture that we've gotten. And this adds such a great element to it. Again, Daniel Craig, Catherine Zeta-Jones, absolutely fantastic all around, with Simon Winsor and Frank Darabont as well, writing and directing in this episode. And I think this is one of the best episodes in the show, definitely.
Yes, and I completely think that Daniel Craig did a great job. It would have not been the same without him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the guest actors in this episode are just phenomenal. And it's fun seeing, you know, Daniel Craig in his first ever acting role, you know, especially now that we know him as James Bond. So it added a great element to this episode, which I enjoy it every time I watch it. So, I think that about concludes today's episode. We will tackle the score in next week's episode, so stay tuned for that. If this is your first time listening to the podcast and you enjoyed today's episode, make sure to subscribe to our podcast and leave a review. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and many other podcast platforms. If you'd like to learn more about our podcast, you can visit our website at www.theindianajonesuniverse.com. We've got all our podcast episodes listed there for your listening convenience, as well as a great links page if you'd like to learn more about the expanded universe of Indiana Jones. And finally, to stay up to date on news and announcements and be part of the indie community here, make sure to like us and follow us over on our Facebook page. You can find us there at the Indiana Jones Universe podcast. So thanks again for joining us, and we'll be back soon with another episode.
Once again, I'm Max.
And I'm Will.
And until next time,
so long, Dr. Jones.